school district's own program. And what happens then is you purchase what's called a stop-loss policy if in case there's any large claims. So the risk really isn't there if you purchase the right type of policy and you have the right type of people setting it up.
You're paying
for
the administrative costs yourself, essentially, right?
You're basically paying. No, you're paying for an administrator basically to administer the insurance, but you're self-funding it. You're paying for the claims up to a certain point. If the claims go over a certain point, then the insurance company kicks in. Think of it, Mitch, as almost like an HSA, where except in the HSA, there would still be a low deductible. The plan wouldn't look any different than it is now. It's just that the school district would pay most of that deductible part.
I understand what you're saying. But
yeah.
Nan's here is sitting there telling us they looked at it and didn't look at any sense. You two are completely in disagreement on that.
Yeah, I think those kinds of things will happen. But we brought in experts from not from WPS, which is a provider for the district, but from Blue Cross. There was a group called the Alliance, which helped small businesses.
Yeah, you're bringing
in
insurance companies. Bring in agents that know what they're doing. Don't bring in insurance companies. They're going to tell you all day long that you need to stay fully insured and it's a risk and it's dangerous.
Well, we had a wide range.
You need to bring in people like the Mortensons and the Housemans and the people that know what they're doing, and my company and other agents that understand how to set up a self-funded.
Well, why don't we talk about the next go-round, okay, Steve?
Absolutely.
Maybe you can.
And maybe we can get some of our experts on our.
From the insurance industry? No,
from the district. Because it's something we do look at.
All right. Well, Steve, I want you at the next meeting, too, just because they'd love to have you there, I'm sure. Carol and Nan would love to maybe serve you some coffee. But anyway,
everything deserves discussion. The problem is when decisions are made, to communicate to the public that it really has gotten a thorough look at and a decision was made based on a certain amount of information.
Just trying to keep everybody's feet to the fire on this stuff. Now, when will the sky fall? Because we heard from the superintendents, you know, the rabbit is out of the hat. We hear from parent activists talking about how these programs have been cut. But yet, I don't think people in the street are going to really see anything or understand it until they see, 30 in a class, maybe $500 to play a sport, eliminate orchestra. I mean, what's it going to take, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think the superintendent's analogy was that the cuts were less drastic than he had anticipated originally. That's not to say the cuts aren't going to have a dramatic effect on a number of people, on kids. You were talking about the cut in clerical staff at the schools. That will affect the way in which parents and the public communicate with schools. It'll affect kids. The increase in staffing, the elimination of a position at middle schools and high schools is going to have an impact. Now, it's an inch-by-inch thing, and, you know, I don't know when the public is going to say enough is enough.
And I would think the public would also want to see some priorities, and I know because you mentioned the five administrative positions, but we did see janitors and teachers taking the hit the last go-round. I think disproportionately, I don't know how many people are downtown, but wouldn't the goal be to try and have the classroom and the teacher-student relationship be the last line of defense? In other words, you wouldn't want to go there first, clearly.
Yes, and that's exactly what we protected, particularly at the elementary school. We didn't change it at all.
Well, do you have an attrition plan then? If somebody who's making the biggest bucks with the administration, which I understand those contracts just get, extended no matter what without a board vote now or with the executive administrators?
Formula? They cannot get the formula is that they cannot get more than the teachers got in the preceding year, and we do vote on administrator on the compensation package. We make decisions about
now. Is there an attrition strategy in place where when they retire that perhaps they just won't be replaced?
That has been used a number of times. Sometimes when somebody retires, we do some shifting. We have done.
Might have to, don't you think? Given the situation.
But then it's a question of whether the reduction makes sense fiscally, and I'm not sure. We're eliminating an architect position. When you do projects, you have to have somebody draw up the plans so that people can bid on it. We're going to have to contract that out. I think it's going to cost us more.
I mean, what about some of these? I mean, the lead principal, isn't there a position of lead principal, a principal to watch the principals, and then we have, of course, a number of deputy superintendents, and of course every school, I think, in the high school level, they have a principal for each grade and so forth.
Right.
And we hear that you have to get rid of an architect. I mean, again, and I know you're there seeing it
but,
every day.
But Mitch, you keep telling us we need to clear out central office. We're doing that at your request.
Well, I'm glad I have so much power. They never called me for advice, but...
Yeah, Mitch, when I was on the board, we had an assistant superintendent for each area. So there was one for Memorial, one for La Follette, one for East, and one for the West area. Now we're down to two, one for high schools and...
I'll admit I'm clouded by my mother, who taught for 35 years and never did what an administrator ever told her. I mean, she always hated the paperwork and always hated them meddling, so I'm skewed by that, I'm sure.
Yes.
But, I mean, what is this lead principal position?
Well, first of all, you have to look at the fact that there are 31 elementary principals plus two assistant principals, so that's 33 people, which is a very large number for anyone to effectively supervise, and especially as we are going through a time when we are having a lot of new principals.
This sucks.
That brings me to the question on the recent issue of upgrading the electrical facilities at Senate Middle, which were initially proposed at, how much was it, $40 million?
$400,000 versus $800,000.
$400,000 versus $800,000. Sorry, it's all in the decimal points, Nan. Now, pretty soon we're talking about real money. No,
right.
And we're told that was to save money because you were going to do some work down the road, and you thought, well, let's just do it now, and it'll actually save money. But then yesterday, Lucy Mathiak, newly elected school board member, said half of it was to save money, but half of it was due to the inability to get the bids out on time.
I really don't know the basis for those comments. One of what Doug Pearson, our staff, said is that they looked at the new project and did an internal estimate of what they thought it ought to cost or what the bid ought to come in at, and it was around $800,000.
Welcome to Outside the Box with Mitch Henk. To be a part of the program, call 321-1310 or toll free at 1-877-235-1310 or email Mitch at MitchHenk.com. Now, here's your host, Mitch Henk, on News Talk 1310 WIBA.
All right, we're going to do one more quick segment with our 8:30 guests because we can give a chance for Nan and Carol to make their closing arguments here. We're talking about the schools and if the sky is going to fall sooner rather than later, or already is falling. And Nan Bryan, you want to make a point about the taxes, because the property tax is obviously too high for a lot of people already. So if they go up not at all, or they go up by 1%, it's too late. Been there, done that for a lot of people.
Well, I think that's an issue that really needs further discussion, probably in the state, but certainly in this district. Since 1994, when the revenue caps went in, the district has increased the property tax bill to the citizens of Madison by 22%, and that's over an 11-year period. Inflation in that period of time was 32%. So we're running well under inflation in terms of the property tax bill that we present to the citizens of the district. And this needs a lot more discussion so people understand what's driving their personal property tax bill.
So the actual levy,
right.
The bill itself has gone up less than inflation.
Right.
Is your argument.
Much less than inflation.
Even with assessments going up.
Well, that's what we need to talk about, because if your assessment goes up more than my assessment goes up, Mitch, you're going to pick up a larger share of the bill. Mine's going to go down.
You're talking about the average bill?
Yeah.
You're figuring in assessments with your claim there, right? I mean, assessment.
No, I'm talking about how much the district is charging the taxpayers.
Wait, what, percentage-wise?
It has nothing to do with assessments, and that's why people get so confused about this whole thing. The only thing the district can control is the amount of money that it charges its taxpayers. The district can't control assessments.
Well, the reason I ask is because let's take property tax, let's take the mill rate. You're talking about the rate. I mean, if your assessment goes up by 20%, I mean, you can actually cut your rate and have a bill go up.
Absolutely.
So,
the district has nothing to do with that.
Okay,
the only thing the district can control is the amount of money it charges the taxpayers.
The total number of dollars in the tax levy is what?
Dollars, a percentage increase. So,
So
assessments, regardless of assessments.
Right.
Here's the. Well, and again, I think a lot of that is just based on you know, where somebody was 5 years ago or 10 years ago. I mean, I was making the point to Carol off the air. I mean, with the Fox River and the PCBs, they could say, well, we're doing a wonderful job now. We're not having as much in terms of emissions as we once did. But you know what? If you've had 100 years of emissions, we already kind of reached the point of no return. So even we're doing well this year or in the last 5 years or 10 years compared to the previous 40, I mean, you come to a point on a fixed income where you can't afford it no matter how much it goes up. Or even, you know, so I mean, isn't that why people are feeling a little frustrated?
Well, certainly for older people who are in fixed incomes, that's the case. So we have to address that specific issue, but we can't starve the education of the children for an issue that affects a certain amount of the population. So we're talking about apples and oranges, I think, when we go in that direction.
Well, we
all
do
the district can do is control its own spending, and it certainly has done that. The state has helped with state aids, and that's part of the picture as well. We don't have enough time to get into all of it. I think it's an issue really worth exploring, however, so that people have a better understanding of what's driving their taxes.
And what do you think is driving their... Well, of course, you think it's the way it's set up, right? I mean, the fact that we rely so heavily on the property tax, I mean, and that's part of the discussion.
Right, and wealth is growing in Madison, which is a fantastic thing when you go to sell your house. It isn't so great when you have to pay your property taxes, but that's the way the system is set up. And for my husband and myself, our value has increased 80% over the last 11 years, we aren't going to get as much out of this home as many other people are going to get out of their homes because our assessment has gone up at a slower rate. Therefore, we pay less taxes. I mean, we pay 167 less school taxes in 2005 than we did in 1994. You tell me one other thing that you're paying that much less in 11-year span. That's incredible in my mind.
So, you better stay in that house.
You betcha. Yeah.
Well,
of course, I have to be your singer so I can get some money, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, we'll work on it after the show. Well, Carol, you've got some taxes over where you live, don't you, over there?
Right, yeah.
Near the water.
Lakefront property has increased tremendously, but it's our investment.
By the way, go ahead, sorry.
I am not going to, I mean, I clearly know when I raise the, when I make budget decisions, what its impact is going to be.
Well,
but even so, in the 10 years that Nan is talking about, or 11 years, our school taxes went up $450.
In 10 years?
In 10 years, our house value more than doubled.
Let's go to Mary Sue quickly with Nan Bryan and Carol Carson. Good morning, Mary Sue.
Good morning. Good morning, Nan. Good morning, Carol.
Hi.
I just wanted to know, because I think sometimes I get kind of confused, but in doing some of the research, Nan, and not understanding, like, the tax levy, you know, owning a home on Madison's far, far west side and knowing that, like, our property tax increased, you know, over the average for our community, about 13.5%. So we got hit pretty hard. But in comparing, since Mitch brought up, like, mill rates, in comparing, like, some of the surrounding areas, I think it's kind of an interesting discussion when talking about assessments and mill rates that, you know, my husband and I discovered if we were to take our home and move it to Oregon or to move it to Middleton or to move it to Verona, we would be paying actually hundreds of dollars more. Even to be living in Cottage Grove, we'd be paying a lot more. And actually, and also, in comparing some of the numbers online, I noticed that, you know, a lot of the surrounding communities, as a percentage of their tax bill, pay a lot more than the Madison Public Schools do. And I think it's an interesting discussion for the entirety of Dade County to realize that it's not just Madison.
Well, Mary Sue, I appreciate it. But pretty soon we're gonna try to say, let's pay more. I'm not paying enough in property taxes.
Absolutely.
I'm going to have a bake sale and see if we can put some more in.
See, I mean,
the
flip side of this is as you starve the school system, you may lower the value of your house because the value of houses in Madison is tied to the quality of schools.
Well, starving is probably maybe a little strong. When you say, I mean, what's the operating budget now? About 300 and what?
Current 20, is 321. The proposed
321 million. Go ahead. Sorry.
The proposed will be 332, I think.
And so, I mean, when I think of starving, I think of you know, Mother Teresa with the in Calcutta. But I mean, you know, but I know what you're saying. But it's not quite that bad yet. Anyway,
not yet. Okay. We're on our way though.
Well, we'll keep watching. By the way, maybe we can add 10 minutes to the school day or 5 minutes. Wouldn't that help a little bit? Because the kids are going to go back. One of my favorite topics about middle of June next year, right? I mean, can we ever add 5 minutes to the day?
Well, the state law requires both a certain number of days and a certain number of hours and minutes. So adding 5 minutes to the end of the day will help us on the hours and minutes, but not on the number of days.
Well, on that happy note, well, thank you both, Nan Bryan and Carol Carstensen. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, Mitch.
Thank you. And work on your singing, Nan.
Okay, I will.
Right, we'll come back with
this is 1310 WIBA.